It's time for Razzle Dazzle Radio, and I'm pretty excited because today I'm the new kid on the block. I moved to Columbia in 1973, and I like to say that I got out of the hippie van and Columbia was the only place for me. But now I found out our guest, Tom Brzezinski, was here in 1968. Yikes! And of course, co-host, friend, and producer Carolyn Kellerman tells me she arrived in 1970. So anyway, Tom, it's a pleasure. I bet you can tell us a lot of stories about things that have happened in Columbia in and about since 1968.
Well,
huh?
It's nice being, I guess, the old timer on the block, being with the two of you. I feel like I'm with Patty Maxey and I'm Laverne. With the
we'll
Andrews sisters,
it.
But that goes back just a little before our time, maybe.
Good, Tom. Let's talk about the old days. I'm Carolyn Kellerman, and Judy Templeton, the new kid on the block, has introduced our world famous Mr. B.
Oh,
now, come
please.
On. I could give you some trivia questions like who was one of the first people to start the Columbia Film Festival?
Helen Reuther and Marcia Gorey, and I came on board later on that first year after they discovered that the acoustics at Slayton House just were not up to snuff. There was such an echo in the theater that I decided that maybe they might want to consider moving to Bryant Woods Elementary School, which I opened in 1968 as media specialist. The unique thing about the school was the fact that the building's cafeteria actually had, of all things, a projection booth built in with a spiral staircase. So it was a great place for me, an avid film buff, to be able to show films. And they had a nice large screen. They had a good sound system. And it was the same type of gray folding chairs that Slayton House had. So after two films over at Slayton House, I suggested they consider moving to Bryant Woods, which they did, and they spent many years there very happily, as long as they were doing one Friday night showing nine times during the year.
And I can remember our family going there and with Betty Hagen at the time, and we would roll out our sleeping bags because the chairs weren't comfortable and lie down there with pillows and watch the films. So.
Wow. Oh, exactly. People would bring whoopee cushions and things like that and and have a whoopee time with the films. We even showed one film, Lucio Visconti's The Damned, and that film had an X rating. And
boy.
I still remember John Vermette getting a phone call from the superintendent of schools, Dr. Gotke, saying, John, what's this X-rated film doing being played at Bryant Woods Elementary School? Well, as it turned out, two of the board members at the time were both members of Columbia Film Society.
Oh,
so
boy.
They set him straight. It was Barbara Rudlin and I forget who the second person was, the name escapes me, but they reminded him that it was strictly an adult film series, that no kids were admitted, and he had no problem with it as long as it was just an adult audience. So, and with two board members having their membership in Film Society, everything was fine.
I have a personal story to tell because our kids went to Bryant Woods Elementary and you were there, you were there for at least it was Mark and Michelle in those days in the very beginning in 1970. And we were going away. No, actually it was a little bit later because we had come back. We had moved to California and come back to Columbia, 75, I think, around then. And we were living in the Jacobs House, which was on Green Mountain Circle, renting the house until we could find another place to live. And we needed a babysitter. And it turned out that Mr. B was a babysitter as well. And he also not only would be terrific with the kids, but he used to show movies. Okay.
Oh, boy.
And one night, we were very thrilled that he could come watch the kids. And he put on the movies and popcorn and all kinds of festivities. And the owner of the house,
Ed Jacobs.
Not from Germany. He was living in Germany. Yeah.
Knocked on the door. And he walked in, looked around, and said, looks fine to me. But there was a party there. I told the kids, invite your friends over. I said, that's no problem. So I brought a movie over. We had a great time with the kids. Had a ball. Those were the fun bohemian days of Columbia.
Sure,
when
right?
You moved here because of the philosophy, the concept that Jim Rouse had.
Yes.
Those were more of the fun days. Not that they aren't now. It's just that
the
raving liberals moved to Columbia. And
you
started
betcha,
the place.
Right? Yeah, we moved here from California, and I remember telling my husband he was playing tennis in this little Marin County, California, which I really hated. And I said to him, I'd read about Jim Rouse's dream, and actually had heard a lecture in Berkeley, and I said, I ran down, and I said, Mike, we can live in this new community called Columbia, Maryland, and I'm like this. I said, we're blacks and whites and Jews and Christians and rich and poor can live in peace and harmony. And he, hit the ball a few more times, looked up and said, where is this utopia? And I said, it's between Washington and Baltimore. And he said, isn't there a tunnel between Baltimore and Washington? And that was the last. We did move here, though. In any case, let's talk about some of our early beginnings, if it's okay with you, when we worked together on Critics' Choice, the television show. And, of course, Judy Templeton worked also for Howard, what was it called in those days?
Howard Cable Television, I think.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And those were the days. One of the things they asked us to do, Carolyn, myself, and also Alan.
Right.
Alan, good grief.
Yeah, well, we'll think of it.
Yeah. Alan Field, who was a disc jockey on WCAO. The three of us.
His real name was Irwin. He just changed it.
That's right. That's right. And I was at Bryant Woods on a Saturday or Sunday working in the media center, and I heard a knock on the windows, and I looked up, and there is this husband and wife and two children standing there. So I went over and invited them in. It turned out to be Alan Irwin Field and his wife and the two kids. And they came in. They said they were moving to Columbia. They wanted to take a look at the school where their children would go to. So Lou, Alan, and I, we walked around the building with the kids and showed the kids where their pod would be. And they became very, very active, especially his wife became very, very active at the school. And that's how we met. And with Carolyn, Alan and I, we were approached, I think, by Scott Kramer, probably, to do like a local critics review show for Howard Cable Television. And we met at the old building on Plum Tree, which is no longer there.
Yeah.
But it was a nice building. It was a nice little studio. Mm-hmm. And we did dance reviews with Carolyn and using her expertise. Alan was doing a lot of the Broadway and the shows, which at that time were probably at Garland Dinner Theater,
right,
which is in the same building that Toby's now occupies. And then I would do film reviews. And we had a blast doing that for a number of years. It was a fun time to be alive in Columbia and a fun time to be able to do things like this.
So, fantastic time to remember. You're right, in Plum Tree. I lived right across the street. So I did kid shows, a show called Kid Stuff, and had to run across the street dressed up as Rainbow Bright, Snow White, some of those costumes. And sometimes I'd piggyback on Critics' Choice. And this is all I'm going to say, is that it always looked like they were having fun, and they had some glasses chinking together once in a while. And I said, geez, I picked
Don't I wish.
Show to do. I got kids. Carolyn's, all I'm going to say about that.
We were high on life back then.
Right. And it was a lot of fun, though.
You
still are involved with the movies, of course, films. So what are you up to these days?
Well, let's see now. This is, I started in 1969 showing outdoor films in Columbia. Huh. After the first year at Bryant Woods, I thought, wouldn't it be nice to give something back to the community? So I rented on my own a couple feature-length films and took the school projector, took a card table, a bed sheet, and a clothesline and a long extension cord up to Rain Dream Hill, where the Burdells and a lot of the nice early families lived. And we set up the card table. I tied a rope between two trees and I used the clothesline and ran the extension cord over to Helen Byer's back outdoor outlet. And I'd given a couple kids purple ditto invitations to the neighborhood to pass out on the mailboxes and things like that about what films were going to be shown that summer. So families came, and they could sit on either side of the sheet. One side would give you the reversed image. The other side was the corrected image. But we had a blast doing that for two summers. And then CA decided, well, wouldn't it be nice to share it with a larger audience? So the building that Whole Foods Market now occupies was, even before the Rouse Building was there, it was just an empty field. So they plowed the field and they mowed it and they put up a big piece of plywood and they erected an electrical box. So I would bring the card table, the films, and masking tape and the bed sheet down. And I rented films for a third summer, and we did them down there. And at that point, the Columbia Flyer was in its infancy, and they started mentioning it. And CA started mentioning it around. And we did films down there for that summer. And then the following year, this is when CA decided to move everything to the hillside between Clyde's and, which was then the Rouse Building or Whole right. Foods Market. And they would do programming 7 nights a week. They had 5 nights for bands, for local talent, for local teens to perform. And movies were every Monday for family audiences. And every Friday was anything from a G to a PG-13, which is what we now call it. And it's been going on ever since. So this was my 48th or 49th summer doing wow. that down there. Plus, Columbia Film Society is now in its 51st year here at Howard Community College and Smith else? Theater. Yes, so absolutely. Film programs keep on going.
So let's ask him about his Santa Claus days.
Those Santa Claus days are still going on.
I love it.
So
okay.
What happened? Barney Bohannon.
Oh, that's a blast from the past.
I know. Okay. He was the director over at Slayton House, and he called me one day and said, how would you like to be our Santa Claus for a community celebration? And I said, I would be delighted. And then he said, well, how much do you want to get paid? I said, no. I'm in the community. I want to do this as a community service. And he said, no, we have to pay you. And we argued back and forth, and I never could quite figure out the reason why they had to pay me. But they gave me something little minuscule, which was fine with me. And so I started being Santa over at Wild Lake, and the fire truck would pick me up, and we'd go on Faulkner Ridge Circle. We'd go on Green Mount Circle, and we'd go on the big circle over at Running Brook, and the fire truck would blasted siren. We had a great time doing that. And then I started doing the same type of thing over at Long Reach, over at the Long Reach Fire Station, and would do that a different night. So after that started, I then started doing the village centers. And to this day, I still am at Harper's Choice, Dorsey Search, King's Contrivance. Let's see now. And two or three others, Oakland Mills. And having a great time there. Plus, I do Santa at Turf Valley for their Sunday brunches. So
wow, it turned out to be a good deal.
Well, you know what? I enjoy doing it. I enjoy seeing kids' faces light up. I enjoy seeing their smile. And I enjoy seeing the parents enjoy their children having a good time. It's like taking them down to Disney World for the sure. first time and watching them in their awe of experiencing all these wonderful things down there. And Santa has that same type of philosophy, that same type of experience. And like I say, I still get a big joy out of watching them. If I may, one little story.
Sure.
One year at Turf Valley, I had this grandmother whom I had seen there for a couple of years as Santa, and she handed me an envelope and told me the story, and I put it in my pocket. And those are the years when I was going around from table to table to table for the Sunday brunches. And I went over to the table where she was sitting with her son and his wife, and the granddaughter. And I did the yada, yada, yada. We talked about what do you want for Christmas, and the grandmother told me what she got last year and what she was hoping to get this year. And as it turned out, they had been to New York at the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Day Parade, and the grandmother and son and daughter-in-law had taken the granddaughter to Macy's Santa Claus, and she had written her Santa letter and put it in the Santa mailbox at Macy's. The grandmother got the letter out, and after I finished talking to this child at the table, I started to walk away, and I turned around, and I whipped out that letter from the Macy's mailbox, and I gave it to her, saying, I do get these at the North Pole.
Wow.
Now, she had not told her son or daughter-in-law what she had done. They started crying. The granddaughter was looking at me, and I turned and walked away because one of the things I've learned, you don't dwell on it. I would love to have watched the expressions on their face and what they said afterwards. Yeah. But that is almost like a private time for the family to enjoy and not a time for Santa to say, did I get you? Did I get you? Did I get you? And it was a very rewarding experience for me to be a part of a family celebration like that.
Have you had generations like parents come back, they shared.
I've had parents of parents bringing the third generation back when I do Santa, and it's quite a thrill, you know, seeing them from some of the early families at Bryant Woods who still bring, who still live in the area. What is, I find amazing, and I find this true when I do the Lakefront films, every summer I will get at least one or two former students who will come back and say when they went out into the world after they went to college, some of them got jobs in various places, mainly down south, and they found life so different from the goldfish bowl they grew up in Columbia and Howard County. And they moved back because they wanted their children to be a part of that experience. One of my former students at Clemens, Kristen Quaid, actually moved a couple doors away from the elementary school that she went to over Clemens Crossing, just so she and her husband could raise their children in the same environment that she grew up in. She was so enamored by how nice the schools were, how nice the staff was at the school she went to. She wants her family to be a part of it. Here, they don't even have any kids yet, but she's anticipating.
Wow, that's a good. That's good that you set that legacy to, for them to remember too.
Absolutely. On the subject of education, I'm going to be Barbara Walters now. Judy always says to me, you know, don't do this. Are you getting into it? How do you feel now about the education system, Howard County, and the busing and the people complaining and people worried about their houses not being bringing in as much money when they sell it, et cetera, that's going on right now? Is there any comment?
Not really at this stage. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what does happen. You know, I think it's all in its infancy, and there's a lot of discussions that need to take place. I think every child in Howard County or anywhere really has a right to a quality education. And if it means shifting some kids around, I can see that happening. If it betters the child's experience and better the child's chance of getting a good education. And I tell kids when I go and sub, especially the fifth graders, you can tell the fifth graders, you're in the best school system in the state of Maryland. Maryland ranks as one of the top school systems in the country. And I ask them, what does that mean about the education you should be getting? And usually there are a couple hands that'll shoot up and the kids will say, a good quality education. And I tell the kids, you're here and getting it right now because your family has moved here in Howard County, whether it's Columbia or in the outskirts. Your family has moved here to give you that good education. They're paying their tax dollars for it. It's up to you to get that education. A lot is on your shoulders now to experience the kinds of things that you hope to experience as you grow older.
And Carolyn, for you and me, the answer lies where we began, because we all came here. Well, and you too, Tom. We all came here for a reason. And the reason that we came is we loved the diversity that we had in the schools. And we felt that was part of our kids' education as well. So while we won't carry this on too long, I think that it's really important for us to always go back to where the Columbia mission roots sort of began. And I know it is different now. And I have lots of fabulous memories and wish we could go back and watch your movies in the, on the sheet between. I'd be happy to get in a sleeping bag. But anyway, so I think that's the answer.
I agree. Moving on. Another political question. Sorry about this, Judy.
Go on, Carolyn.
The situation right now, as we have it, space is such an important element, and it's becoming more and more difficult for the arts, the performing arts, to find a place to share their talent. For example, Svetlana Kurtsova of the Ballet Etoile has always done a Nutcracker at Thanksgiving at the Jim Rouse Theater, which is supposedly the community theater for everyone. And it's difficult, you know, because it shares space with schools and things like that. And this started way back when Donna Pidel, who had the Royal Ballet Royale, and they did it on Thanksgiving. So this year, however, the school system is not allowing Svetlana's The Nutcracker on that weekend because, I guess, saving money, not opening up the school because it's a Thanksgiving weekend. And I wondered if you're seeing a more difficult, you know, for artists to perform, or you yourself in anything like that?
Well, sadly, I do agree with you. I still remember when Bryant Woods first opened, the fifth graders actually for several years had an opera experience. And they would go see like a 1-hour opera presented by the Eastern Opera Company, it was called. And I still remember taking the kids over to Wild Lake High School, where it was performed one year. And sadly, one year they did an opera called The Medium, and it was not an appropriate opera for elementary school kids. And why it was permitted, I don't know, but that was the end of that. But at that point also, every third grader went to a symphonic experience, either the Baltimore Symphony, the National Symphony. It was mainly the Baltimore Symphony. And I still remember the Post Pavilion donating their space. I still remember the howitzers from Fort Meade there for the 1812 Festival Overture, the PE teacher from Marcia Maddox, who was with Ann Allen's dance company. They danced to The Sorcerer's Apprentice, and she was, I think, a laundry detergent she dressed as when she came out and danced. But it was a beautiful experience, and I believe the bus companies furnished free buses for it. But every third grader in Howard County had a symphony experience. And I think it's so important. You always say, and I hear people say, well, we'll leave it to the parents to do these things. Well, I'll be darned if parents quite often don't do those things. Sometimes they simply are unaware when these events are taking place. Sometimes they just don't care if they're taking place. But I think this is where the school system needs to pick up on doing these things. Peggy Shear at Clements Crossing, even when they stopped doing Baltimore Symphony field trips, she always made sure when she was third grade team leader that all of her third graders at that school went to see the Baltimore Symphony at the Meyerhof. And the symphony just doesn't come out to Howard County anymore. There used to be a series at Howard High School where they would come out and do 3 to 4 concerts a year as a Howard County subscription. But that doesn't happen anymore. And this year, much to my sorrow, talking to the art teacher at one of the elementary schools where I subbed last Thursday, they no longer are doing the art field trip with fourth graders, which has been in existence since I remember, back in the late 60s, early 70s, because of the budget cuts. And that to me, you know, almost it wounds my heart knowing that these kids are going to be denied that type of experience because of budget shortfalls. I'm actually with a group that I'm checking with to see if maybe there's a way of them funding at least some of the schools to do it this year. I've actually been in contact with the art supervisor. I don't know Gino's last name, a very, very nice person, on email, asking for information on what type of budget cut we were talking about. But I hate to see something like this happen, as it still is. The art funding is there as far as for the art teachers, for their supplies. The same thing is true for music and for PE and for technology and for the media center. But I see some cutbacks starting again, and this does worry me greatly that these kids will not be able to have that experience.
You know, especially because, not to promote the class that I'm teaching here, which Carolyn taught before me, but it's called Introduction to Creative Arts, and it's all about teaching potential teachers how to integrate the arts into classroom. So I love the college because they're always forward thinking. So that really does, I like the way you said, that wounds my heart as well, to think that we're going to be decreasing the arts and not increasing them, because if there any time in the world we need them, it's now.
Absolutely.
Well, and the big mistake was thinking that the Rouse Theater was going to be for the Howard County community, the Columbia community. Mm. I think that was a misnomer from the get-go, and it was never advertised as such. But being in the high school, that auditorium, in a way, justifiably so, should be for the students at the school and the events that they have. But that leaves precious little time for other groups to go to the building and other groups to use it. I can't believe they won't open the building for, you know, for the ballet on Thanksgiving weekend. Perhaps if someone offered to pay the custodial fees. I know Columbia Film Society, when we were at Bryant Woods, we actually paid on a day. It was a Friday when the school was closed. We paid the custodian under the table to come back that evening to open the building.
Not anymore.
And Film Society had no problem doing that. And now these days, like above board, above the table, why can't someone come forward and help to pay the custodial fees that are required? and the staff that you typically would have hired anyway of high school students to work the theater. And why can't you still do something like that on Thanksgiving weekend? We need an indoor venue that is large enough to hold, let's say, like at least 500 to 600 people, so that there can be more performing arts venues available for other groups to use. And where you locate that, to me, making it adjacent to a school property because of parking lots makes sense, but you need to make sure it is more independent and is run by maybe the Howard County Arts Council or maybe a special committee to help make sure that this space is available as cheaply as possible and for any group that does want to use it that can afford it. You need to pay your bills. There's no doubt about that. But it's nice be nice if there was a space available. And Howard Community College is filled with at Smith Theater. There just isn't the time for other groups to use it.
And you have to be grandfathered in the Hoco Palazzo, the Film Society, Candlelight, I believe,
yes.
And a couple others have been grandfathered in so that they will always be able to use it. But to rent it outward, it's impossible.
It's very, very hard to do now because you just don't have the time. I know one or two groups rented it during the summer. And that's when the space is more readily available. But sometimes the arts just aren't around during the summer. I look at some of these performing arts groups. This is my artsy week. Yesterday was at Rep Stage here at right adjacent to Smith Theater. Tonight I'm with Three Dog Night down at Ram's Head in Annapolis. And tomorrow is Toby's Dinner Theater.
Oh boy!
For Bodyguard. And, you know, it's a good week for the arts. It's a good week for me. I'm happy about getting out and enjoying the arts, especially the local ones in Howard County. And, you know, you want people to be exposed to them. And it's good when you have the ability to have a building available to do things like that.
And there is good news for Svetlana and the HYL Ballet. They are able to use the Rouse Theater, rent it. October 27th. It will not be the Nutcracker, however, with the whole beautiful sets and costumes and Russian tutus and live music and all that. But it is a celebration, an autumn celebration of the arts. So I believe they're going to have some folk dancing as well as the ballet. So at least they're able to get their kids up on stage.
Right. There is a group of parents who have tried to foster the arts in Howard County. And I'm not too sure how you can find information on them. You can probably call the school system, and they can give you the name of a contact person with email and phone number, because I think the arts need to be supported starting at preschool and yep. elementary school. Heck, I remember the days when Bryant was first opened, and we had a field trip on a Saturday. We had the nosebleed, the higher up seats, because they were the cheapest, at the Mechanic Theater in Baltimore for the first tour of Fiddler on the Roof.
Wow.
And there was a supervisor in the county, and I'm not going to mention Mary White's name, but she objected to doing something like this, that this was uncalled for. We didn't need to do something like that. And then I got the phone call from Dr. Mary Hovett. God bless that woman. She was the assistant superintendent. She said, "Tom, not only do I want you to do it, but you have a ticket for my son, Kenny." and that helped to foster doing things like that. That first summer, I even had a field trip to Carter Barron Amphitheater with a summer library program at two elementary schools to go see the Supremes and Stevie Wonder in one concert. And the other concert was for Peter, Paul, and Mary and their discovery, a guy named Gordon Lightfoot. And these were, Ed Cochran, who was a former president of the school board, a former county executive, he brought his daughter, who still is active in politics in Howard County to this day.
We have got to wrap the show up, but Tom, promise you'll come back.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. With more stories. Even more. Right? We didn't have enough time.
Oh, there's a lot from 1968
like a bad
on.
Penny. I'll be back.
Again, another end to Razzle Dazzle Radio. Thanks for listening, folks. And for Judy Templeton, Tom Brzezinski, Mr. B, Santa Claus, I'm Carolyn Kellerman. Thank you.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.